Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
I love when Jesus says this. He talks about the fact that, you know, you're going to be brought before kings and governors on account of my name, and you will bear testimony to me, but make up your mind not to worry beforehand how you will defend yourself. For I will give you words and wisdom that none of your adversaries will be able to resist or contradict.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Luke chapter 21. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Luke 21 is where we pick up in verse 5. Actually, maybe you remember last week we carried on a little bit beyond the end of chapter 20, kind of following the thought. And we left off with Jesus in the temple. And so we pick up with Jesus in the temple in verse 5. So some of his disciples were remarking about how the temple was adorned with beautiful stones and with gifts dedicated to God. But Jesus said, "As for what you see here, the time will come when not one stone will be left on another. Every one of them will be thrown down." Now, the temple that they're referring to was a massive and magnificent structure. When the people came back from the Babylonian captivity and rebuilt the temple, it was a far cry from what it had been. So Solomon built this extraordinary, magnificent temple. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it. Upon the return from the captivity, Zerubbabel rebuilt it. But it was nothing in comparison. As a matter of fact, when you read in those passages in Zechariah and in Haggai, as they were, you know, completing the temple, the people were weeping. And it says that some were weeping for joy that the new temple was built, but others were weeping at how unimpressive the new temple was and compared to the old one. So the people that had seen the former temple, they just thought, "Oh, what is this?" The people that had not seen the temple were, "Hey, this is amazing." And so Haggai even speaks to them and encourages them. Those of you that saw the former temple in its glory, you look at this one and you think that it's nothing. And then that's where Haggai gives those great words, "Do not despise the day of small things." Or maybe that's Zechariah. You know, they're ministering side by side. And then the Haggai prophecy is, "For the glory of this latter house will be greater than the glory of the former." And so now when we come to the time of Jesus, this temple has been beautified by King Herod. And you remember there's a point in John's gospel where Jesus, he cleanses the temple, and the leaders, the chief priests, they come and they say, "By what authority do you do this?" And he says, "Destroy this temple and I'll build it, I'll raise it up in 3 days. Now, John tells us he's talking about his life, his, you know, the temple of his body. But they said to him, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you're going to raise it up in 3 days." So they didn't really understand what he was saying, but they tell us that the temple had been under construction for 46 years. So Herod had started the project, and it was still going on at the time of Jesus. And Herod was a master builder. If you go to Israel today, you can see the remains of Masada, which was a fortress that Herod built on this flat mountain out in the Judean wilderness. How many have been to Masada? Some of you guys have been there, yeah. And the amazing thing about Masada is what's left of it. You think, wow, after 2,000 years, you can see still today, you can get a hint at the glory of what Masada would have been in its heyday. If you go to the coast and you go to Caesarea Philippi, which is up in the north, but the coastal city of Caesarea Maritima, they will show you the remainders of this unbelievably glorious harbor that Herod had built. And then, I mean, you can't really see much, but they have lots of artist renditions of it. And when you look at it, you're just absolutely stunned at the magnificence of it. So we know what Masada looked like. The Herodian is also another fortress that Herod built that you can visit today. It's even more intact than Masada. From all of these, though, you get a clear picture that Herod was extraordinary as a builder. So when the disciples are talking about the temple and its magnificence, it was indeed magnificent. It was one of the wonders of the ancient world. It was that extraordinary. And so there they are, they're in the temple. The disciples are looking around at everything and they're marveling at the stones. And one of the things that they undoubtedly would have marveled at would be the size of the stones. And so that's another amazing thing when you go to Israel today. Of course, the temple no longer exists, but what is called the Western Wall, some people call it the Wailing Wall. You know, you see those pictures where Jewish people are standing facing the wall and maybe see a video, they're praying there. That's the Western Wall. That was a retaining wall that was built by Herod for the Temple Mount. And today, they have excavated underneath in that area in what they call the Rabbi's Tunnels. You can go in and you can see these stones that are the foundational stones for the retaining wall that are so massive that nobody to this day has any idea how they were ever put in place. It's really amazing. So many times I've walked along these stones and just thought, how did this even get into place? So it just, all of this just kind of giving you an idea of how magnificent this was. So for the disciples, this is absolutely amazing. But then Jesus says something that's even more amazing. As for what you see here, the time will come when not one stone will be left on another. Every one of them will be thrown down. And I think, honestly, this just would have been unimaginable. They couldn't even conceive of how it could, such a thing could happen. Teacher, they asked, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they are about to take place? Now, the parallel passages to Luke 21 are Matthew 24 and Mark 13. So Matthew 24 is the most lengthiest portion. Mark is a little more brief. But when you compare Matthew and Mark and Luke, one thing, and you see it in the text of Luke as you go through, but one of the things they asked specifically was, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So Luke doesn't state that, but that is also what is being asked here. And so here Luke just puts, when will these things happen and what will be the sign that they are about to take place? So as Jesus goes into his explanation, here in Luke, Luke is the only one that actually separates the judgments, because there's at least two judgments spoken of here, maybe more. You know, we talked about this before, how oftentimes prophecy will have a near fulfillment and a far fulfillment, but prophecy sometimes might have two or three fulfillments before it reaches its total and final fulfillment. So in Matthew 24 and Mark 13, you don't get the sense of the two distinct judgments, because Jesus is going to talk about the judgment that's near. It's, what is it? It's less than 40 years away. And then he's going to project out to a judgment that hasn't yet come. But again, there could be included the other judgments beside the one that happened that Jesus is going to describe here. And so, but first, he starts by projecting out to the judgment that hasn't yet come. So what does he say? He says in verse 8, he says, "Watch out that you are not deceived, for many will come in my name, claiming I am he, and the time is near. Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and uprisings, do not be frightened. These things must happen first, but the end will not yet come." So Jesus projects out to what is even the future for us today. And he tells us some things about it. He talks about this period of time. There are going to be people coming, claiming that they are the Savior, the Messiah, claiming that the time is near. Jesus just says, don't follow them. Now, when you go through history, you find that there were plenty of people that would come with those claims. So Jesus warns them about that. And then, again, when you hear of wars and uprisings, don't be frightened. These things must happen, but the end will not come right away. Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, famines, and pestilences in various places, and fearful events and great signs from heaven." So again, future. But look at the next verse, verse 12. "But before all of this," so before all of this happens, so now he's stepping back and he's going to talk about the more immediate judgment that will come. And look what he says. "Before all of this, they will seize you and persecute you. They will hand you over to the synagogues and put you in prison. And you will be brought before governors, kings, and all on account of my name. And so you will bear testimony to me. But make up your mind not to worry beforehand how you will defend yourselves, for I will give you words and wisdom that none of your adversaries will be able to resist or contradict. You will be betrayed even by parents, brothers and sisters, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. Everyone will hate you because of me, but not a hair of your head will perish. Stand firm, and you will win life." Verse 20, "When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, know that its desolation is near." So Jesus here describes what they will experience, and we see a lot of this as the book of Acts unfolds for us. So we see the persecution, we see them being brought before the rulers of the nation. We know from that time as well that there was betrayal with family members, and especially around the judgment that is about to fall. So the Romans besieged Jerusalem in 66 AD. And the Romans were under the authority of a man named Vespasian. And so in 66, they surrounded the city. They built a mound up against the city, and they assaulted the city. But the city withstood for 4 years. The city didn't fall ultimately until 70. And in that time, Vespasian was called back to Rome to become the emperor. So his son Titus was the one who actually finished the job in Jerusalem. But it was during this siege and under the leadership of Titus that they would go in. The Romans would finally breach the city walls, and they would go in and they would dismantle the temple. Now, the question that many people have asked is, how on earth could they even have done it? And there's different theories about how it was done. But Josephus, the Jewish historian, he gives somewhat of a description of the things that happened. And Josephus gives an interesting little clue, and it has to do with the fact that the stones were limestone. And that the limestone, if heated to a certain extent, because the limestone contains water, they would combust at a certain point. And so the belief of some is that these massive stones exploded, and that's how they ended up all coming down. That might be the case. We don't know exactly. But by the time Titus was finished, the temple was gone. There was no temple remaining in Jerusalem. But it was around the Roman siege of Jerusalem that hostility against the believers would have increased. And the reason for that is because the believers, the ones who were following Jesus, they knew that Jesus taught that there was a judgment coming. And they were not getting on board with the resistance. And so this would be another reason why they would have been ostracized, why they would have been hated, why they would have been betrayed. And so the things that Jesus is talking about here are the things that those believers who were still in Jerusalem at the time, these are the kinds of things that they would have experienced. Now, he says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, know that its desolation is near. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the city get out, and let those in the country not enter the city. And here's the key. For this is the time of vengeance or punishment in fulfillment of all that has been written. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women, nursing mothers. There will be great distress in the land, wrath against this people, and here it is, and they will fall by the edge of the sword and be taken captive as prisoners to all nations. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So Luke makes it very clear that he is talking about this near judgment that is coming, because the end result is that the people are going to be slain by the sword and led captivity into the nation. So this is exactly what happened. When Titus came in and crushed the revolt, multitudes and multitudes were slaughtered, and there were the remaining Jews were taken and they were led back captive to Rome. Now, if you go to Rome today in the area of the Forum, you can see the Arch of Titus. And it is really quite fascinating. And in the Arch of Titus, you know, in these big arches, these were to honor the victors. And they would carve in them little scenes. So wherever it was that they went and the battles that they fought and so forth, they would all be carved into these massive stone arches. And the Arch of Titus, in that arch, you have a picture of the Ark of the Covenant being carried, or not the Ark of the Covenant. You have a picture of the candlestick, the menorah, that is being carried, and you have, you know, the Jews in chains marching along with it. And so this is the depiction of the conquering of Jerusalem by Titus. And it's really pretty profound to just stand there and look at that and think, wow, this is a picture of what happened. Now, there's been numbers of captives that have been estimated, some, you know, hundreds of thousands, some have even said as many as a million. Nobody knows actually the true number. But suffice it to say, what Jesus said here is exactly what happened. They were led away captive, back to Rome, and then dispersed as slaves into all of the nations. Now, I want to go back in the verses that we've read for a minute and look at a few of the things that Jesus says here to them. But one thing that I think is, it's just a good reminder, and the context is obviously much different, but I love when Jesus says this. He talks about the fact that you know, you're going to be brought before kings and governors on account of my name, and you will bear testimony to me. But this is what he says: but make up your mind not to worry beforehand how you will defend yourself, for I will give you words and wisdom that none of your adversaries will be able to resist or contradict. That is such a great word of encouragement, isn't it? I mean, obviously, for those who are literally going to go into this kind of a situation. But I think it's interesting, too. Jesus says, for I will give you. He doesn't say, for God will give you. He says, for I will give you. And that's just a reminder that his promise to be with them always to the very end was a promise that he kept. I will give you words. But what I love about this is just, you know, it's an encouragement to us as well that when opportunities arise where we are called upon to testify, we're called upon to bear witness, to just know that the Lord will give us what we need at that time. I love that. And I've had many experiences where I have seen that happen. And you guys have probably had experiences like that too, where you don't really know what to say. And then suddenly you start talking. And as you're talking, you're thinking, wow, this is pretty good. Well, this makes sense. And I'm actually telling people about Jesus here. And that's the Lord. That's him at work speaking through us. And that is such a great reminder. It's such a good encouragement. Now, some pastors who don't really want to take the time to study, they say, oh, I don't need to study. You know, what do you do that for? I mean, Jesus said, don't worry about it. Just get up and talk, and he would give you words. Well, we also know that it doesn't work like that.
For the month of January, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled Confronting Christianity by Rebecca McLaughlin. Sickness, disease, broken homes, poverty, people young and old all around the world are experiencing distress. Have you ever wondered how a loving God could allow so much suffering in the lives of people he claims to love? Well, in her book, Confronting Christianity, Rebecca McLaughlin tackles this question and 11 others about Christianity. If you've ever wrestled with questions about Christianity, or want to be prepared for those who are, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. to order Confronting Christianity by Rebecca McLaughlin. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of Luke. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.